Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
An elven warrior trapped on modern-day Earth. Two friends with different destinies meet at a magical school. These are some of the stories we at Electric Lips Comics are working on. You can get your copies of both The Mana Chronicles and Tales of Mithril at ELPmerch.com. Support independent creators. Explore the merch featuring exciting ELP Comics art with a wide range of designs. Electric Lips Comics. Imagination electrified.
Welcome to the Mostly Potted at Night. Mostly, I am Salem, joined by my co-host Graveyard. Now, this is episode 122 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. With October and all those terrible movies behind us, it is now my turn to torture Graveyard with movies he doesn't like, or maybe not. He doesn't know he likes them yet, but he probably won't.
It's only fair. This is why we have the month of Salem.
Yeah. So this week we're talking Mind Games. That's right. Prepare for artistic cinematography. I know you're cringing. Plots that you need to noodle out. I know. Melting into a puddle. And performances that can actually be labeled as acting. I know, it's kryptonite for you and your terrible movies. So join us for some movies that will try to resuscitate that part of the brain that may have been permanently damaged from one too many terrible haunted house and clown movies. So this week we're doing Pontypool, Enemy, and Vivarium.
Two of which are Canadian.
They are, yes. Two are Canadian and one is, I don't know, I'm guessing every country in Europe. I don't know. In the beginning of the film, you know, when they have like, you know, whatever, you know, pictures, you know, there's usually like two or three of those, you know, different kind of companies that are involved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that was like 5 minutes long for Vivarium. Oh, it was like every random company that I've ever, I mean, none of that I've even heard of. It was just like it kept going and going and going.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, you're correct about the trying to repair our brains. Like I said, at the end of last month, even I was hurting.
Yeah, man, that's I don't know. Haunted houses are not apparently good subject matter to focus on, and clown movies are never good. I mean, there was like one that was decent, mm-hmm. but that's it.
Yes.
All right. So, we'll start with Pontypool, from 2009. Now, I don't, you know, most of these, I don't think any of these movies we can really get too in depth with the recap here, because it's mostly like something you have to see and experience. Like we can tell you what happens, but really you're not going to understand it unless you actually like watch it.
And arguably two of them are, you could also call them single room movies.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, okay. So Pontypool, I said, essentially there's one scene of the protagonists, or one of the protagonists, driving to work in the opening sequence. And after that, the entire movie takes place inside a radio station.
Yes.
No one leaves. People come in, but they, the protagonists do not leave. So they're trapped in there. So, essentially there's a guy who's like the, I guess he's like the, whatever, the radio personality in the shock morning jockey type guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's, it seems to be like some small town area. He seems to have been like a big town guy that got fired. And now he's kind of like, you know, working the B string, out in, you know, a suburb or something somewhere.
It's kind of Bubblefuck Canada.
Right, yeah. Pontypool, which is, yeah, I'm guessing, a small town. But anyway, so he's like their morning guy. Mm-hmm. And they're going through their standard morning thing. It's him and his two engineers, who are Sydney and Laurel Ann. and they're basically just kind of going through their morning lineup. Now, as they're going through their morning lineup, like the guy that's, you know, in the chopper, the sun sign chopper, who is not actually in a chopper because they can't afford a chopper.
Quote, chop.
Yeah, he's in a car sitting up on a hill where he can see the whole town with chopper effects playing in the background. So anyway, so he sees a what appears to be like a riot. We don't see this. This is only described over radio.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of riot of people like attacking a doctor's office. Now they can't get any kind of like confirmation of this. Like there's no news outlets that are reporting it. The government is saying nothing. The police are saying nothing. They can't get anything. So they reported all that, but they can't do any follow-ups because they can't verify it. Right. That's journalism. You have to verify things before you can do it. And they lost contact with the guy who was reporting it live. So they have no connection to it. So they basically have to go back to like regular programming, which is like, get, you know, people in brown face singing. I don't know what they were even singing. Bible hymns. I don't even know what the hell that was. So essentially, you know, and then slowly after that happens, they start getting trickled in of reports of like, you know, weird things that are happening, like kind of like, you know, riots are happening. People are like attacking each other, seeming to be mumbling and ranting incoherently while they're doing so. They finally reconnect with the Sunshine Chopper guy, and he basically describes himself being attacked by a group of these people. They're like eating each other, like they're, you know, basically attacking each other. They're mumbling all kinds of weird stuff. He's like trying to like relate what they're saying and what it sounds like. We get some of it we don't. And it basically ends with him kind of rambling on with certain words. I think he's saying like simple, sample, sampled, simple, or something like that. And he kind of cuts out.
Well, yeah, we got like essentially they're speaking like baby talk or like baby voices are coming from a grown kid.
Right, right. So we get like Laurel Ann, the one of the engineers, starts to like experience the same thing where she's like having trouble saying certain words or remembering certain words or whatever is happening. And she essentially gets like infected by whatever it is. And she becomes, you know, she starts to like lose her mind kind of.
Right. So he's missing.
Right. Yeah. So like, she's losing focus on words and stuff. So like the actual doctor guy who's doctor's office that was being attacked earlier, that doctor manages to sneak in a window.
He crawls his way. He said he crawled his way miles or kilometers into the.
Well, yeah, but it's a tiny town. I'm pretty sure he didn't crawl that far. So he comes in and basically, oh yeah, I'll explain everything, and then really doesn't say much at all. He kind of you know gives a little bit of information, like, oh yeah, this, you know, Laurel Ann's infected, like she's hunting us, but she doesn't know it yet. You know, like she's infected.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what that means, so they kind of lock themselves in the booth, you know, the recording booth, and they lock her out. And they basically kind of watch her degenerate to the point where she's like mumbling incoherently and just trying to like get in the booth and like basically throwing herself at the window enough times that she just eventually like kills herself.
Right. After like, she bites off her bottom lip.
Right.
All that. Yeah.
She pukes a bunch of blood and kills herself. Anyway, so the doctor is trying to explain that apparently this is some kind of virus that is transmitted by language and transmitted by understanding language, saying and specifically the English language. They get a, like a little cut in from a government agency that tells you don't talk in English, like don't translate this message because it was in French. So they try to like start talking in French. The doctor is speaking some other language. We don't know what it is, but he seems to be doing better when he's not speaking English because he seemed to be infected. But then he was speaking a different language and he seemed to be recovering. So essentially they, a big group of these things come into the radio room, you know, the engineer room outside of their booth. They trick him with like a recording to where they go outside. They come out, they eventually they you know, they have to kind of fight their way through them, and they end up getting trapped in like this closet, and they're communicating in French. And the Sydney, the other engineer, and the guy, the doctor, basically sacrifices himself so that they can get in this closet and hide. So he like starts screaming, so they chase him, so they get in this closet. They're talking in French, and then she eventually like, you know, says like she can't do it anymore. She starts talking in English, and then she basically becomes infected
like immediately. Yeah,
right. She keeps like repeating kill, kill, kill over and over and over again. And the DJ guy basically, you know, gets a eureka moment where he understands that, obviously I'm just going to simplify it here, he understands that understanding the word is what's infecting people, so that if you purposely don't understand it correctly, you can't be infected. So he goes on this repeating thing of you know, kiss is kill, right? So that you're not understanding kill as in kill, you're understanding kill as in kiss, which means that your brain isn't understanding it correctly, and somehow that saves you from being infected.
Yeah, and he's they're kind of saying, "Oh, up is down, oh wait, it can't be opposites," because you can still understand it from that context,
right? So, yeah. So basically, she gets like healed, right? Mm-hmm. She's not infected anymore. So they decide, okay, well, we got to tell everybody this. So they kind of go back down. They start rebroadcasting, and you know, the DJ guy is like, obviously, if you don't understand what he's trying to do, it sounds like complete nonsense. It sounds like ramblings, right? Like he does not making sense. He's like, you know, oh, simple is sample, kiss is kill. He's like all these things. Like he just, but you know, not really fully explaining it. He's just saying like, oh, this word, like, you know, replace it with this word. And then
underground is kangaroo.
Right. Yeah. He's not fully saying what is going on at this point. He may or may not be infected. We don't know. I don't think he is, but you know, they kind of imply that he might be. And anyway, the government is like, shut down this, you know, transmission. This person is obviously infected. You're spreading the disease. Like, you need to stop. And they don't. And then there's like a countdown in French. And then we're guessing there's an explosion, but the movie just ends.
Yes.
And then there is a post credits sequence of like, I think it's just a for fun thing. But it's like, did you watch it?
No, I didn't like those ones.
It's like the DJ and Sydney, like he's kind of like a James Bondish kind of character, and she is like his like Bond girl kind of character. And they're like, you know, he's got like a gun, and they're like just kind of talking about how whatever, you know, like tough guy action movie kind of stuff. Yeah. I think it was just for fun, but
gotcha. Now you had seen this before, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So what were your first thoughts? Really the first time you saw it?
I don't remember the first time I saw it. It was a while ago. It was at least a decade ago when I saw it for the first time. a friend of mine told me about it and I watched it. I mean, it's an interesting movie. I mean, it's more interesting to think about what is occurring, right? I mean, the movie itself is good. It's well made. I do enjoy it. I think I more enjoy the concept of, you know, virus transmissible through language. Mm-hmm. Or even understanding of language, or even a specific language. I mean, you know, because again, certain species of animal carry diseases, some don't. You know what I mean? It's just a different vector. It's odd. I don't know how viable it is, but it's an interesting concept to think about.
Yeah. Now, I hadn't seen this movie, but as we discussed before, there's been a lot of outlets that I watch that have talked about this movie heavily. So I knew all the main points of this movie. Didn't deter or take away from anything about the movie, knowing about it ahead of time. So that was nice. Just kind of.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Seeing how it played out, and I just found it really interesting that, you know, you're not necessarily seeing the action. You are. It's literally just people in a radio station hearing it. So it's like, imagine hearing, you know, about a zombie apocalypse through the radio or phone calls,
right? Yeah, like you're experiencing it with them. You're mm-hmm. trying to put together the pieces just as they are. Like, you don't
right.
you literally have no more information than they have, which is, it's like I said, it's well presented. It's a fun movie. Again, it's not really a movie that I would want to watch over and over again or once a year or anything, but it's a fun movie. It's worth a watch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, graphic gore violence, it's not really much of that. So yeah, no. it's an easy watch. Do you want me to do my highlights first?
Sure.
All right. Well, Laura Ann gives him a present for his first day at the station. And it's Glenn Levitt, which is fantastic. I love it.
No, thanks.
I know. And kind of like what we said, it's almost a single room scenario. You know, it's, you know, the, what do they call it? The when TV does it, right?
The bottle episode?
The bottle episode. It's essentially a bottle movie, which is just a really interesting take of it because, you know, we watch lots of movies that have zombie outbreaks or stuff like that. And there's always a maybe 5 to 10 minute scene of a, you know, radio station, of a news outlet, of whatever, and they go into it, but to take it from that point of view and kind of doing the less is more, right? You're hearing it, and you know, even at the point in the movie, they're going, they're bullshitting us. This is a prank. Like, you don't know. You know what I mean? You have, you know, they had the cop who isn't trustworthy reporting in. They have, you know, like all of a sudden BBC is going, is this real? Like, okay, does that really make sense that the BBC would be calling someplace in Pontypool? No. But it always has that. Well,
technically, Canada is technically still part of the UK. Like, they still recognize the king.
Yeah. But it's just interesting to see it that you don't know what's real if it's a prank. And it takes a long while for it to do it. So it's a nice slow burn for that. You know, language as a curse. It's curse words. And that's essentially what it was. And it's just a quite unique thing because the idea of words having power. And I think that is an interesting take of that, of the words having power. You know, did they stop it? I would say no. Because if they don't know what the fuck's going on there, no one's going to follow through. No one's going to know what the hell that means. I mean, granted, they gave their best effort, but realistically, I'd say it's a bad ending.
Oh, no, I mean, it definitely is for them. I mean, the government had to have known what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, later in the movie, you realize that the government message that was sent out had to have known what it was. Because right. It says, don't translate this message. Don't speak in English. You know, like, you know, don't speak in terms of endearment. You know, all these like weird things that they're saying.
No baby talk.
Right. And that was probably because the people that they saw being infected, those were the words that they were infected with. And they thought that that was what was causing it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know. And it could be any words, as we found out later in the movie. It's just whatever word you get stuck on.
Right. Which is really interesting. It's not like, you know, don't say rutabaga or whatever, right. You know, the cursed words, there's no defined list. So it still keeps a mystery into it. And I do appreciate that. So it's quite unique for it. So kudos to honestly being able to pull that off, because it could go very badly in the wrong hands.
Right.
That's what I got.
Yeah, I mean, most of mine is the same. I mean, I like the radio show format. I like the slow progression to where you think, well, you know, the first time you watch it, you think it's going to be a zombie movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because the way that they're describing it, it sounds like the beginning of a zombie movie, but it ends up being easily something different. I mean, the people are kind of zombies, but just kind of in a different way. You know, again, the words "is a virus" is good. We already touched on that. The ending, again, I'm pretty sure they fixed it, but it wasn't good for any of the protagonists or people we were following, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to stop them from blowing it up, they had to get it. I mean, I guess it could have happened to worse countries. Like, if it happened to the U.S., a very small percentage of U.S. people are bilingual. So if it had to happen somewhere, it's probably better to happen in Canada, because they're more likely to be bilingual, I guess.
Well, I mean, but it begs the question is, okay, radio stations, how far did they really go? How far was the infection? I don't feel, maybe they stopped it in Pontypool. I feel like they didn't stop it anywhere else.
Well, they also don't know if it could spread through the radio.
Correct.
Again, like, there's no proof that it spread through the radio at all. Because the way that it got into the radio station is the people that were in brown face singing, the one girl that was a part of that was infected when she came in.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a vector of how it got in. You know what I mean? So I don't think it could be transmitted through the radio. I don't know. I think it was just a virus that, instead of latching onto cells, somehow latched onto the language. Whether that makes sense or not, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm not trying to, right, you know, say it's viable. I'm just saying it was an interesting concept.
Well, it essentially triggered something in the human brain is what I equated it to. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like the Winter Soldier's keywords to trigger him. That's how I viewed it as spreading. But
no, I don't. I mean, I just saw it as words were a virus, and when you're trying to understand a certain word that the virus had attached to, that's how you get infected.
Mm.
And then, of course, when the virus infects you, what does the virus? What does a virus do? It takes over and it replicates. So yep, that's why you keep repeating the same word over and over again, because it's replicating.
Right.
And then a virus, like, once it replicates and takes over, that it has to pass it on again, and that's literally what it was doing.
Yeah.
So I just saw it as a virus, but that's mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. Again, there's not a whole lot other than we've already been over that. That's what I got. Okay. So I'll go into the lows. I will say that Lawrence and the Arabians, the brown faced people and their Bible hymn, whatever the fuck that was, I don't know what the hell was going on with that. No. I think it was just brought in to be ridiculous, because the one guy was like literally dressed up as Osama bin Laden. Like,
yes.
I don't know what they were doing, but they were all in like brown face. That is like, I don't know what you guys are trying to do.
Also, why did you go to you went into brown face where people can't see you anyway?
Right. Like in a radio station. I don't understand. Anyway, the doctor guy. Okay, well, the doctor guy comes in. Oh yeah, I'll explain everything. I'll tell you everything that's going on. He doesn't say shit. He doesn't explain it. Like, he keeps starting to talk and then just stops.
Yes. If he's supposed to be the expert, he is shit at it.
Well, I don't think he's an expert. I think he was just a doctor slash scientist and was looking at it as a scientist looks at it, and he was going to give out information that he had so far, but he wasn't giving out the information that he had so far. He was like, he kept like, you know, giving out little nuggets of information. But when they sit down to like talk to him about it, he literally says nothing.
Well, and let's face it. If you have a doctor that might have the thing, he was quite calm and polite waiting for his turn on the radio. Like, fucking stop it now.
I think at that point he thought he was safe, because he thought if they can't hear us, we're safe.
Yeah.
And so he was perfectly safe in that room because it was a sound booth. So he's like, well, they can't hear us, we'll be fine in here. And obviously the other people don't know that, but he seems to have, you know, whatever testing he had done, or experience that he had that morning, like he understood that. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But
right.
And then poor Laurel Ann.
Yep.
I feel bad for her. We got her, you know, she was a hometown hero that came back from Afghanistan and she like seemed to be having like a PTSD episode. Mm-hmm. And then right before she got infected. So I felt bad for her.
Yeah.
She deserved better. That's all I got.
All right, and we discussed this before. Now, it wasn't the fault of the movies, but whatever I was watching on, whatever, it just didn't work. I couldn't hear, like, the last 25% of the movie. So I had to rewatch it and just going, whoever, maybe it was my TV, maybe it was the version I was watching, but, like, the sound mixer just, like, just leaned on, like, you know what? Let's make the music 110%. So, I don't know. I feel like what really that brought to my attention was that you don't need the background music, because this is supposed to be a thing about words. And I think it would have been better without having other music or stuff going on there. Just have the words be the piece of it, right? That you really need to be focusing on.
I didn't have any problems with sound or music. I don't think the music was loud at all. The last half of it was hard to understand because they were literally speaking French and not English. Did you think they were speaking English?
No.
You were like, I can't make out this word.
But I'll get to that next point of, you know, when you have, if you don't have subtitles turned on, that's one thing. Then they throw in subtitles for two sentences of the French going on there and the Aramaic the doctor was speaking.
I'm going to say the format that you watched it on is notorious for having shit subtitles that are incorrect and not put in right.
That's true.
I'm sure if you watched a normal, complete purchased version, I'm sure it would have been fine.
So, and
because the first time I watched it was totally normal, legal, and there was no problems.
Maybe.
So again, like I've tried watching movies on your format before. Like I was literally watching one of the Planet of the Apes movies, and I was watching it for like 10 minutes, like just getting the gist of what was happening with the sign language and shit, before I realized, you know, I'm pretty sure there's supposed to be subtitles because I don't know what the fuck is going on. And again, but that's a movie that the subtitles were built into the film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also a movie that the subtitles were built into the film, and somehow they take them out and then re-put them in. I'm guessing right. For like different languages or something, but it's
maybe.
Yeah, that format is notoriously shit for subtitles.
Nothing against the actress that played Laurel Ann, but she just was into the sound, but like not even really going at it, just like felt really awkward. And while you show her with her bitten off lip at the bottom lip for like 20 seconds, every time after that effect's not there anymore. Like her lips are back to normal.
She's like a person that's suffering a virus that's literally took over her brain. Like,
yeah,
it's her brain trying to understand the concept of like, if she's walking into a window and not understanding why she can't get through, she's obviously not in her standard human thought process anymore.
Right. But I'm saying like the lip effect could have stayed consistent through the scenes. it just changed drastically. And it really just kind of boils down to I guess, like I said, the doctor being shit. And, you know, maybe I need a little bit more explanation to what it was to have a different understanding of it. But I said, overall, it's not bad. They're just bits and pieces that I would have done differently. And I'm trying to think of what I had it written down and I scratched it off. I can't read it right now.
If you scratched it off, it wasn't important.
That's very true.
All right. Anything else you want to add here?
No.
Okay. So Pontypool 2009, mm-hmm. We'll do nonsense ramblings out of 10. How many would you give this movie?
Like I said, this isn't a bad movie. You know, is it something that we need to rewatch multiple times? No. Should I rewatch it? Maybe somewhere else? Yes. I will definitely do that and give it a second chance. But overall, though, I said it's pretty solid. I will give this 7.5 nonsense ramblings out of 10. How about you?
Yeah, like I said, it's I actually give 7 to a movie that I would rewatch, mm-hmm. and I've rewatched it and it's still good, so I'll give it 7.
All right.
So next up is Enemy, directed by one of my favorite directors, Denis Villeneuve. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not French, so I can't say French names very well.
Dennis, call him Dennis now.
Yeah, Denis Villeneuve. I don't know. I've seen him pronounce his own name multiple times. That is, my mouth won't.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Make those noises.
All right. So, Enemy 2014. I will do my best to recap because it's another one of those things. There's a lot of surrealism and visual stuff. But essentially, we are introduced to a peep show, I guess.
A fetish club.
Fetish club where beautiful women are stepping on spiders and killing them with heels. And, you know, we get introduced to Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know if at this point in time it's alluded to it's being him or to his other duality side. My guess is the other duality side.
In the fetish club, it's supposed to be the other side.
Okay.
But when we get introduced to him, like, in his life,
mm-hmm.
then it's the... We'll go with teacher actor.
Yes.
There you go.
I'll use actor in air quotes. You know, background layer number 3.
Right. Right.
So then we get introduced to Jake Gyllenhaal, and he is essentially, I would say, a world history teacher that's talking about the rise and fall of cyclical empires and fascism and stuff like that. I don't think they ever said explicitly what he taught.
They show the website that literally that has like his official title and everything. He's an associate professor of history.
Okay. So we kind of just going through his life, which to most people would see very dull and very mountainous, right? It's the same thing every day, but he gets to be with his girlfriend, and that's fantastic for him. but he's just kind of going in and out. He like, he kind of almost starts losing track of time. Like, you know, his days are just running to days. Like, he's giving almost seemingly like the same lecture, going into that cycle that he's talking about when we get first introduced to him. Anyway, he is talking to one of his colleagues. He's like, at lunch, like, "Do you like movies?" He's like, "What? What are movies?" Essentially. And he's like, "Oh man, you really need to watch this movie." So he does. And he watches the movie, and okay, cool. And then he kind of just goes to sleep and dreams about a scene in the movie where he's now kind of like the bellhop at a fancy hotel in the movie he just watched. He goes, "Huh, weird." So he goes back and watches the movie, and he sees himself in the movie. He goes, "Well, that's odd." And he goes to generic IMDb and is able to kind of find him. He goes, just kind of like, the guy's role is so great that it's just said like bellhops and listed three names. So he starts looking at the actors of the three people in it, and he goes, "Okay." And he gets to the third one. He goes, "Wait a minute, that's me, but clean shaven." And he goes, "Huh." And he looks up his other stuff. He rents another movie that he's in of the three that he has on his generic IMDb. And it's like, "Yeah, that looks exactly like me." Like, that is absolutely bizarre. And, you know, we find that he kind of going through pictures of himself, and he's like, "Huh, I don't remember," you know, he doesn't say it, but it's like, he doesn't remember this picture being taken. And the other person in the picture is kind of cut out, right? And so he does some online sleuthing and finds out that the actor is part of this talent agency. And he goes there, and he's like, "All right, I'm gonna," you know, after shopping for some fantastic sunglasses,
sunglasses when you go incognito, man.
Right. He goes there.
Surprised he didn't get a hat too. I guess that's Marvel incognito.
That's Marvel. Sunglasses and a hat. Yes. Or if you're Thor, scarf.
Yes.
and so he goes there, and he's like, "Okay, well, it's, you know, it's a talent agency and it's locked," but he just tries to get in there, running from his car to get to a door. You know, surprise, surprise, doesn't make it. Second time, he just kind of hide around the corner, and someone opens the door, and he gets in. And, you know, the security guard goes, "Oh, hey, there you are. Yeah, I didn't recognize you with the beard." It's like, "Yeah, how long has it been?" "I think it's about 6 months." Yeah, about. It's like, "Oh, you here for your thing?" He goes, "Yes." And so he gives him like a confidential or personal letter, which ends up having like the actor's, you know, address on there. And he's able to call him, if he gets his phone number, and calls him. And, you know, at first, he talks to a woman there that he doesn't recognize, but seems to recognize who he is just based off his voice. Like, "Huh, that's odd." And he kind of eventually calls back, and he's like, "Yeah, hey, I'm not a stalker. He's like, "Man, we sound the same. I saw you. I think we should meet." And then that call kind of ends, and we flip to the apartment that he was calling. And we see the other side of the actor side, who is, you know, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, but now with his pregnant wife, and they're clearly having some marital issues. And she starts to be suspicious, like, "Oh, are you talking to her again?" He's like, "No, it was a guy. He just wanted to talk. He just sounds weird." "Uh-huh, sure. No, really. Like, well, we can't go through that again." And, you know, they kind of he kind of reverse stalks him a little bit, because he wants to meet up and talk, and, you know, they kind of do, and it's just really weird. And suspicions are going back and forth with the girlfriend of the teacher and the wife of the actor, to the point where, you know, the wife of the actor finds his name and looks him up and goes there and kind of like tries to bait him to see if she actually, if like he's just pretending, like he's just being a douchebag, right? And trying to bait him to say if that's actually him. She's like, "Yeah, I have no idea who you are." And she's like, he leaves. She goes to call him, and her husband picks up. She goes, "Huh." So they kind of just become, I would say, obsessed with each other, the actor and the teacher, right? They're trying to figure out all the stuff going on there. The actor goes to his mom. He's like, I don't have any brothers. Like, no, it's just you. Huh, that's weird. So the wife kind of, wife, the actor kind of realized that she likes just talking to this other guy, to the teacher, more. And so the actor gets in his head, like, oh man, you're fucking my wife. Well, you know what? This is what we got to do. I got to have a night with your girlfriend. He goes, okay, well, let's switch clothes. So that's gone there. The girlfriend starts to suspect things during sex because he had took the wedding ring off, but there's marks from it. It's like, who are you? What's going on here? And then cut to them driving down a highway, and they're just fighting, and they get into a car crash. And would you say they die?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's going on there. Meanwhile, the teacher is now sleeping with the pregnant wife, and she's like, well, I like you better. You should stay. And I try, I think he goes, you know, the next day he goes back and enters the room, and it's just then a giant spider. He sighs. End of movie.
Well, okay. All right. Well, there's one more detail I would add in there, and that's that when, you know, the actor version of him is dead with his girlfriend, and he's now with the wife. He finally opens the envelope. This was the envelope, yes, that he had gotten from the talent agency.
Mm-hmm.
He opens up the envelope, and it's a key. And we know from the beginning of the film that this is the key to that fetish sex club.
That's right.
And then he basically goes, oh, we don't have any plans for tonight, right? Because I think I need to go out. Meaning that he's going to go check out this sex club. And then that's when the spider thing happened.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe creating the duality again.
Right. Yeah. That's the whole
mm-hmm.
meaning. I mean, obviously it's open a little bit to interpretation, but. I've done, because I was the first time I saw this, I thought I knew what was going on, and I was close, but I did some research, you know, like actually looking like what the director intended, you first know, like the what book, the writer, yeah. Yeah, like what all that was intended and what it actually meant. And so
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I got it now. But
yeah, the book is called Duality. So it leads heavily into the dual lives that Jake Gyllenhaal's character seems to be living, and not really crossing paths with each other until circumstantial stuff happens. You know, my first thought was, like I said, this is another thing that was kind of like the movie wasn't ruined, but the ending was by watching other things. It's the spider scene. It goes, that's a what the fuck moment for a lot of people. And I can get that if, you know, we discussed this offline, we talked about it a little bit, and yeah, it makes sense what the idea behind it was. And you know, you do have to look into it and read it to more. It's not just a, you know, turn off your brain and watch popcorn sci-fi thriller horror. It is right. a lot of things to perceive and infer. So I do like it though. It is a pretty solid movie. What were your first thoughts, or even on the rewatches?
I mean, I've seen it several times because I liked the movie. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies I watched a bunch of times, like trying to get all the details, and then eventually I just did a bunch of research to get it all out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 10,000 foot view here is that, you know, the teacher and the actor, they are the same person, and you know, the guy, he starts out as the actor cheating on his wife with the girlfriend, and then so the wife then sees him as a different person and kind of drifting away, and then as he goes off with the girlfriend, and then you know the teacher takes his place, she sees it as her old husband coming back, like before mm-hmm. he turned into an actor, the vain guy that's cheating on her. She sees it as he's coming back to her. Now when he finds the key and says, oh, I have to go out, and he goes to see her again. The spider, yeah, it's a giant spider. It's weird. Yeah, I get it. It doesn't make sense the first time you see it. But the spider actually recoils away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And basically meaning that she has now seen him changing back into the other version of him that she thought was gone. Because again, we saw that version of him die. Like he literally killed that version of himself off so that he could concentrate on his pregnant wife.
Right.
And it didn't last very long because literally the next day he's like, oh, I need to go back to that sex club. And so she sees that in him and she recoils away, seeing that it's, you know, repeating. And then the whole kind of sigh with him at the end is like, yeah, I am doing the same thing. You know, like it's kind of like disappointed in himself kind of sigh.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the 10,000 foot view. Obviously, there's more to it, but that's the gist.
Do you want to do your highlights first?
Sure. Okay, highlights, spider squish.
I know you love spiders.
I mean, I didn't actually show the spider squisher, but like, I'm okay with squishing spiders.
That's your type of club is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I mean, I did, it's like kind of like a slow kind of, you know, it starts off as kind of like almost like a detective story, right? He's like trying to figure out like, okay, is, you know, this person literally has my face. Like, how is that possible? You know, and he's like doing all these different things to like track him down and find him. And like people are recognizing him as this other person and he has no idea what's, it's a fun kind of, you know, unraveling of everything around him. Right. At first he thinks it's just, you know, some kind of doppelganger. And then we slowly kind of figure out that they are very much related and interconnected.
He's living two lives. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But it's an interesting lead up to that point. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a, you know, once we get to that point, he starts like losing grip, right? We see like both sides kind of, you know, fading out, right? of losing their grip on reality and kind of turning into the other. It's an interesting thing, and it's done a lot with camera work and the way that the music is put in there. You know, we see like when they're uncomfortable, when they're confused, when, you know, things are, you know, off scale. You know, well, we understand that because, you know, the way that it's filmed, that is a really good way of doing it. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting, you know, concept with the whole, you know, the duality of man, right? You can be two different people, you know, fighting, competing with yourself. And then again, yeah, that the whole thing is basically like this fear of commitment that a lot of people feel, especially when you have a pregnant wife and you realize that this is like, now this is going to be your life. This is your family now, right? Mm-hmm. So like you have to settle down. You have to give up, you know, your childish things, right? And it's a thing that a lot of people struggle with. It's a very common thing to like, you know, pregnant wife and they get left behind because people, you know, I don't want to settle down, right? And that's essentially what we're seeing.
Right.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I'd say it almost immediately goes into very what the fuck category. Like, you know, if I didn't know this, Denis, I'd be like, is this Fincher or Lynch? Because this is like, you know, Mindful Games. This is like, wow, they go surreal pretty quickly, I think.
No, yeah, they do that. Yeah, that's very much intended.
Yeah, which is good. Like, if you're gonna go balls to the wall, do it immediately. Just throw everyone off. Like,
well, yeah, the spider squishing scene, that's what that's supposed to be, because it's like spider squishing and then all of a sudden it's like mild mannered history teacher and you're like, how the fuck are these things related?
Correct. So I said it does it really well. You know, there is not a lot, you know, this isn't a exposition dump, this isn't a heavy-handed let me explain it to you dummy movie. This is a lot of thinking involved with it, and to understand duality of man and to kind of see things from where, you know, the writer and the director of this movie's point of view, which is an interesting thing to do. Like, you know, it's bold, especially in this genre, quite honestly. You know what I mean? Whether you want to call it sci-fi thriller or sci-fi drama or horror, it's still few and far between to do something like that. This isn't a, you know, get butts in the seat for popcorn and turn off your brain movie.
Right. Well, yeah, this is, I don't think anybody ever labels this movie as like horror. You know, they do, you know, thriller, psychological thriller. Yeah. It's, you know, they call it that, but
it's close to it.
Yeah. They don't call it horror. I mean, again, we've stepped off that path before. It doesn't have to be officially labeled horror in order for us to talk about it.
Right. I mean, it is a subgenre of the movie. It's not the primary genre. So we still keep it into it. So,
right.
And for anyone that doesn't watch and like really pay attention to the movie, the giant spider end, you're going, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, like what the fuck? Because yeah, that's like there's no other spiders. There's no other like weird things like to that level
mm-hmm.
in the film. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, like what does that mean? And then he is just like not shocked at all.
Right.
He's just like a disappointed sigh. And it's like, what? Yeah. So yeah, the first time you watch it, it's like, you know, what the fuck does that mean? You really have to think about it.
Yeah. So, but like I said, I do like that though. It starts off and ends off with a very what the fuck moment. And I love it for that. I'll roll into my low points. When he was talking about movies, like he really seemed like he's never heard or seen the movie his entire life.
Well, and I think that is like kind of sort of intentional because
he gets himself from the actor side.
Right. Yeah. I think like the actor side, like actors are generally into film. I mean, I'm sure there's outliers that aren't, but generally they're very into film. They watch a lot of films. They know the film people. Right. So like in order for him to like kind of distance himself from that version of himself, I think that's why he's like, yeah, I'm not really into movies. And we don't ever see him watching a movie. We just see him like sitting in a very like bland apartment that does. I don't even think has a TV.
Right.
So.
I'm like, if he doesn't know the movies, I'm like, how's he going to watch this? Like the first time I saw it, I'm like, is he going to all Matt have like a TV player? No, he just uses his computer, which is smart. But like I said, just the way he said it, just like, oh, never, I don't even watch him. Like, God damn it. I hate that type of people. But it makes sense from his duality personality to stay away from it. And you could argue that the actor, you know, teaches because he has nothing else to do. That's why he's been gone for 6 months, right? But let's face it, I'm sorry. If he's been three background characters in movies, he's not living that lifestyle. He's not making, you know, residuals off his bellhop number three. So it's an interesting take to have that the actor side be so like life in the fast lane and quite honestly like egotistical for really not doing anything. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean that's how actors are. Like if you get any credit on your name, you're now an actor. You know, it doesn't matter how good your acting is. It's, you know, you're now an actor.
I mean, I get that. I also have more credits to my name than he does the actor side. So I view it weirdly that way. And you would think.
He was like doing it in like the real like Hollywood, though.
Yeah. You would think that the mild-mannered teacher would be with the wife and the actor would be with her girlfriend.
Well, I think it's, you know, I think the acting made him into that vain, shitty version of himself.
Mm-hmm. And let's face it, he doesn't really learn lessons. He might need to.
Well, that was the whole thing. Yeah, like they thought he did, and then he didn't. And he even disappointed himself, which is right. What the ending is.
Yeah. So, like I said, I'm just nitpicking at this point in time. So that's all I got. How about you?
All right. Yeah, so there's a lot of spiders. I don't like spiders. I mean, they're squished sometimes, but like we don't actually see that, right? So I wish we could see more squished versions of spiders. I wish there was less spiders, but hey, that's, I guess they're telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
Like a movie rental place in 2014. I don't know if they existed.
Have all three specific movies.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just like, really? What year is this set in? I mean, just the actor version of himself was such a shitbag.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like his, like at first they finally met and he finally figures like, you are an exact copy of me. Got it. What's his first thought? I'm going to fuck his girlfriend.
Yep.
Right? That's like the first thing, like, I'm going to do it. Like, that's his thing. And then he like, his whole plan from then on is to manipulate the other version of himself so he can bang another woman. It's like, what a shitbag that dude is.
Yeah.
And then there's even bigger spiders. as the movie goes along. And the lady with the spider fucking head. I know she was only in a dream, but like, what the fuck, dude?
That wasn't good. But other than that, that's all I got.
All right. So how many nonsense ramblings out of 10 do you give this movie?
I really like this movie. I've seen it a bunch of times and I really enjoy it every time. So I'm going to give it an 8 nonsense ramblings out of 10.
I agree. So this is the first time seeing this for me. I do like it better than Pontypool. I will also give this an 8 nonsense ramblings out of 10.
All right. Now we come to Vivarium. As in 2019. Now, this is the movie you're talking about. There's like literally the beginning of the film when you're like, you know, whatever pictures, you know, whatever production, right? Usually at 2 or 3 production company names in the beginning of it. This film, I believe, has like 100 of them.
Let's just say there would be 5 Deans on a counter somewhere.
Right. It just keeps going. I'm like, dear God, how many companies were involved in this movie? Like, did everybody pitch in $5?
This guy bought us a taco. Right. Taco, you know, Productions.
Right. It's like, wow. It was like, I don't know. I don't notice that shit. So if I noticed it, it was out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Vivarium 2019, Jesse Eisenberg and Mogan Poots. That's basically the only people in this film. Aside from the child. And I think there's, what, 3 different ages of child that we see. That's it. But that even the child is more of like a...
Arguably 4.
Yeah, but it's like a secondary character.
Correct.
So essentially, we get... Mogan Poots is like a kindergarten teacher. Jesse Eisenberg is like the school's gardener. I'm guessing that's they meet up at
that
school.
That has to bring his own tools to work.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for a place to live together. They're having a hard time deciding on a house that they want to go to. So they go to this new realtor place. And the guy, Martin, is extremely super creepy and dresses like a Mormon.
let's face it. If you go, he was on a murderous rampage and killed 15 people today, you'd be like, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's the guy. I saw that guy. But yeah, so they're like, oh, do you want to go see these like houses that all look exactly the same? But it's, to be fair, that's how a lot of these like suburban neighborhoods look. It's just the same house repeated like 100 times. So it's like, it's not outside the realm of possibility of this neighborhood looking like that. It's a little overstated, obviously, but on purpose. But like, it's not that far off, which is the scary thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, he's like, okay, yeah, let's go see this house. So they go to this like, subdivision with all these like exactly painted houses. They're all the exact same size, color, everything. They drive down a couple of streets and like, here it is, number 9. And they go inside and they're like, yeah, okay, it's a nice place, but like, you know, everything's the same. And so he's like, oh yeah, go check out the backyard. So they go out to check out the backyard. Martin, the realtor, just leaves.
Yeah.
And then they are then in the backyard going like, when's everybody else going to move in? Because they see all the other houses around them are empty. And they're like, and they turn around, Martin's gone. They're like, huh, that's weird. So They literally spend the entire rest of that day trying to get out of the neighborhood. Driving every direction they can. They take turns driving. You know, like maybe one person doesn't understand it. And every time they drive and they think they're far enough away, they literally pull up in front of the same house again. Because it's the number 9 is their, you know, house that they were assigned. So they're like, what the hell? So they literally run out of gas. There's nowhere they can go. So they're like, okay, well, I guess we have to stay in the house, right? So they eat like the strawberries and champagne that they had left for them. And they make the statement of like, none of this stuff has any taste. Like it's food, obviously, but like it doesn't taste like anything.
It has like no flavor, they said.
Right. Yeah. So they literally get delivered like a box of food and like as if they're supposed to stay there. And so they basically kind of like freak out trying to get out of there. Like he's like trying to do everything to like get them, because they realize they're like being watched, they're somehow stuck there. So he like literally sets the house on fire, like, you know, like just trying to like get out of there. And they like watch the house burn down. And when they wake up in the morning, the house is back.
Yep.
And they, and then that morning they, there's another box in front of the house. And this one, they open up the box and there's a baby in it.
That's the worst thing to find in the box.
I agree. And then there's a note on the box that says, raise the child and you will be released. So they basically like come to terms with like, okay, I guess we're stuck here and we got to raise this child. And so it kind of fast forwards to like the child being like 8 years old. So thankfully we don't have to deal with the baby for too long.
He still screams and make awful noises.
Yes. Lot. Yes. And so it's obviously not a human child. I mean, it's very obvious. Like the voice is all wrong. Does not act like a normal child. Is basically, you can tell watching their behaviors to try to like copy them or, you know, imitate or something. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like that. I mean, they have a TV, but apparently the only thing that comes in is like alien ovision that the kid watches, but they have nothing. And they're just supposed to like, you know, watch this child. So she kind of just like consigns herself to like raising the child, because there's nothing else that they can do, to where Jesse Eisenberg like gets obsessed with trying to get out. And he becomes obsessed with digging this hole in the front yard. Like he thinks it's going to somehow, he's going to find a way out by digging this hole. And then literally for the rest of the film, he is digging this hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, because he thinks he hears stuff down there. So he just keeps digging to try to find something different. Now, Imogen Poots is trying to like figure out what the, you know, the child is, or like what's going on, because the child sometimes disappears and then comes back and says that it was meeting with other people, but won't say who they are because he's not supposed to tell. And she's trying to figure it out.
Right.
And then, you know, she's like, oh, let's play pretend. And she basically tricks him into acting like the other person that they met. And he literally like these big glands like come out of his neck and he starts making these weird croaking, screaming noises. That's the first like genuinely alien thing that happens.
Yeah.
So at that point, like, then she also finds this book that apparently the child had been given, and it's like all kinds of like alien symbols. And there's literally a diagram of like the goofy bubble frog neck that he made when he was making those noises. So it's like obviously given to him by whatever monsters have been happening there. And that basically ends that phase. We get another phase. I mean, then obviously the child is growing faster than a normal child does. Cause after like, I think it was like 98 days, the child was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
So 98 days, child aged 8 years. So however much longer it is now, the kid is probably like, I don't know, looks like 18 maybe. Right. Adultish.
Yes. He sells his Mormon outfit and haircut.
Right. So yeah, like now, yeah, Jesse Eisenberg is like completely detached from them. And he's also like very, very sick. It looks like he's got like radiation poisoning. Because he keeps like digging, but that's like all he can do. And he's basically like so sick that he can like barely move, but he's got like the sores and stuff. I'm pretty sure it was like radiation poisoning or something similar. So she's just like trying to figure out, because the kid leaves like every day, like trying to go to like school or something, but like she can never follow him where he goes. So like he always, like whenever he gets out of sight, he like disappears and she can never find him, you know, like lost in the neighborhood somewhere. And he just comes back later. But she just keeps trying, and he's just sick. He can't do anything, but he's still trying to dig, and she's trying to figure out what's going on. Eventually he dies of radiation poisoning.
Right.
Or whatever it is. So after he dies, she like loses whatever little bit of humanity she had left. And she, you know, hides until the guy is leaving. And then she attacks him with a pickaxe. And at this point, we start to see like what's kind of like the real fabric of reality here is like, in order to get away, the kid like opens up a fold in reality and like jumps in like underneath the curb of the street. Like stretches it out, makes a door, and then, you know, she holds it open and she goes in, and then she's like going through different realities where she can see that this is happening to a bunch of other couples.
Yeah.
And we see like some of them have like literally killed themselves because they don't want to deal with some of them just sitting there and like sobbing because they don't know what to do. And there's a bunch of different things. And she eventually ends up back at the house again. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she basically has to like just stay there because there's nothing else that she can do. So, she, you know, now the kid is taking care of her because she's like sick now. And then eventually she dies herself. And then the kid puts both of their bodies in the hole that he was digging in the front yard, buries them in, and then takes their car and goes back to the realtor agency where Martin is now old. He literally like watches him die, folds him up, puts him in a garbage can, and then puts on his name tag and takes his place.
He's the new Martin.
Yeah, he's the new Martin. And as he's literally wearing the same Mormon clothes and the same reactions and everything. And then that's the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, I mean, essentially, this is like, you know, two people get kidnapped, are forced to raise an alien child, and then die doing so.
Right.
That's essentially the one sentence summary of the film.
Yep. You've seen this before too, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The wife watched this and I was gonna watch it. She's like, I already seen it. So she didn't want to watch it yet. I'm like, okay. You know, honestly, I didn't know really anything about this movie going into it. Like, that wasn't spoiled. It wasn't anything for me. So that was nice. I was refreshed to be able to go into a new movie I've never seen with zero information. And this almost plays... I'll get into it. It's very sci-fi-esque, and there's a lot of things to allude to with the layers and the life cycle and what's really happening to the characters. But overall, I'd say it's a good tongue-in-cheek suburban mockumentary of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, it plays out like a Twilight Zone episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a long Twilight Zone episode.
Yes. I'll get into what I think it really reminded me of, but do you want to do your highlights first?
Sure.
Okay.
So yeah, I like the concept of it. The whole like, you know, weird. They literally like open up the film with a scene of you know, those birds that, you know, literally the bird will come and lay an egg in another bird's nest.
That's the cuckoo. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that bird literally kicks out all the other eggs, kicks out all the other babies that hatch. And then like this little tiny bird has to take care of this big ass bird. That's obviously not its child, but it thinks it is.
Yeah. The cuckoo just goes, it's your problem now.
Right. Yeah. So this is like, yeah, essentially the film is just that, you know, a metaphor to that. Like it's, mm-hmm. That's what it's doing to humans. It's aliens to humans is what it's doing. And again, that kind of, you know, integration concept I thought was fun. That alien book that she ends up finding and reading, I thought was very cool. I mean, it's obviously alien language and it's got the weird alien TV stuff. And it looks like it was formatted like a regular book, just in a language that we don't understand. But anyway, it looked good. I thought whoever the prop guy was did a good job on it.
Yeah.
When we get the glimpses is the like these other kind of dimensions, when she actually like slips through the fabric of reality, like when she's chasing the kid, mm-hmm. when he's running away, it's very cool. It's like these different colors of dimensions, meaning like there's probably, you know, a bunch of different overlapping realities and they're just all slightly different but probably all taking up the same space. Again, a lot of sci-fi stuff in there, but it's still pretty good. Imogen Poots, I like her a lot. She's been in a bunch of stuff. I've liked her, and I think just about everything that she's done.
Except Black Christmas.
yeah. But yeah, she was the girl in 28 Weeks Later.
Yes.
She was in, well, another movie we're going to be watching later. She's in Green Room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, spoiler, we're gonna watch that in a couple weeks. But yeah, I thought she was great in it, and the ending, it's just a bad ending.
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible. I mean, it's a heartbreaking, almost depressing ending, but interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's all I got.
All right. It goes right into weird. Love it.
Correct. Yeah, it's like two people acting kind of goofy, like young love thing, and then just fucked up. Like, almost right. immediately.
Right. Obviously, the idea of aliens or imposters or someone else taking it, Carousel's Child, like the cuckoo bird. I like the tongue-in-cheek jab at suburbia and just how everyone just, essentially, the mom is there to raise the kid, and once she's done with that, she has no purpose. The dad is literally working himself to death. The digging the hole is his job that he has to do, and it becomes his obsession, and he dies from overwork. Okay, so what this reminded me of is Dark City meets Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I get the Dark City. I don't know if I get the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I would say the idea of the different layers and people not understanding the universe around them and having things hidden within things, like when she's going through the dimensions, the colorfulness of it reminds me of like a Douglas Adams type thing. So that's why I say Hitchhiker's Guide. But yeah, definitely Dark City first and foremost. Which I love Dark City, so.
I don't think we've done Dark City. Is Dark City horror? Would you consider that horror? It's got horror elements, I guess.
Sci-fi noir.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like aliens controlling people's mm-hmm. lives. That's like horror elements.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree. Yeah, I was trying to figure out where to lump Dark City in at some point. So
we can do an Alex Perea special.
Ooh, there you go. And like it, you know, the idea of it's cyclical. So you know, you could argue like, okay, so what is the purpose of these children being raised? What's their end goal? To sell real estate, to get the cycle going? To what end is the recycle of Martin needed? We don't know. Like, correct. How bad is this? Like, how bad is this? How fucked up is this really to be? Like, if that's entire life cycle is to grow up, to get this alien language, and then go back to sell houses, it's a meaningless life, quite honestly.
I mean, they could be just literally studying human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just repeating this pattern over and over and over again to learn as much as they can. I mean, like, that's, as a scientist, that's how you learn more about a species, right? You watch them.
Right.
You just watch them again and again and again and again and again. And you learn new things about them while you're watching them. So
that's why I say Dark City.
Yeah. But I think it's literally like kind of like a human zoo almost.
Mm-hmm.
And they're introducing the child to force certain, like, you know, emotional reactions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like how humans deal with hardship and loss and all that kind of, they purposely do put the child in there to do that. I mean, I think it's a dual purpose, right? You're actually like raising the child so that it can continue the process, but you're also like the child is there to like elicit a response so you can get the information you're looking for.
Well, you'd argue that the child is the constant.
Well, sure.
Right. And realistically, you know, when Jesse Eisenberg digs up the body, I mean, they're clearly not the first ones there, even at that location. So it's just a bad ending. They end up in the same spot. So, you know, does everyone bring their own shovel? Do they look after gardeners that have their own tools with them to dig up that spot to come to that realization? There's so many questions that you just...
I mean, yeah, it could be a time loop. I mean, right. Who knows? Like, he could have found himself.
And I think that would have been a bigger mindfuck if he found himself.
Well, I don't think it needs to be. I don't think you need any more layers. There's already enough.
But like I said, I do like it for what it is. Yeah. I'll roll into my low points. That kid is annoying. If I would probably take the pickaxe to it well before Mormonhood took hold of it at 18.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, like, it wasn't a kid voice is even coming out of him.
No, yeah, it was, like I said, it's definitely not a human child.
Right, it is, it's almost a mimic. An English mimic kid, essentially. I understand he's supposed to be annoying as hell, and well, they did it well to show how annoying that kid really is. Obviously, Serberia. I don't like the idea of this cookie cutter homes. I don't want to live in a cookie cutter home. That's why I didn't get one.
You know, yeah, I mean, I cookie cutter home, I don't think would bother me that much, but they're so close together.
Yes.
Like, you have like 10 foot in between them. Like, I've lived in the city. Like, I understand, like, you know, bungalows are like 10 feet apart. But again, you're jamming a lot of people into a city space. You need that space, right? Mm-hmm. And not all the houses are exactly the same. But yeah, they're similar, sure, but they're not the same. But like, yeah, those ones where it's like they're literal exact copies of each other. Like, everything is the same. Like, it's yeah, it's like a Twilight Zone, man. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. And then you get like these HOAs that tell you like what you can and can't do. Like, fuck that.
Correct. I would not. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. So, and you know, let's face it. I feel like sometimes my day to day feels exactly the same. I feel the mundaneness, the doldrums of this movie. Because I wake up and feeling that way a lot with my job.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of us. I mean, that's, yeah, that's like 99% of humanity feels that way.
Yeah. It hurts.
It does. It really does.
But that's all I got. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Martin the Realtor. Yeah, the identical Suburbia. We've already talked about that. Now, I can't think of a worse personal hell for myself personally, that if I got kidnapped by aliens and they would force me to raise a fucking child
with food that tastes like nothing.
Holy shit. And I got no TV. I got nothing for entertainment. What the fuck am I supposed to do with my time? Like,
well, he lasted a day.
Right. I'm like, holy shit, dude. Like, what? Like, I got no radio. I got no TV. I'm supposed to raise some weird alien kid. Like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Oh man, I don't know. Maybe they had other things to do and they just didn't show them. But like, dude, yeah, that was like this sterile environment where like I'm just supposed to raise this weird child. Like, no way in hell. That's my personal hell, I think, is this movie. that's why it scares me a lot, because it's like I can't imagine a worse fate of like, you're now kidnapped, you can't leave, here, raise this kid. Fuck that.
Right.
So yeah, so that's what I got. All right, so Vivarium 2019, number of nonsense ramblings out of 10. You want me to go first?
I'll go first. Is this a good watch once movie? I think so. I don't think I need to watch this necessarily again. I don't think there's anything I necessarily missed. It is. Like I said, it reminds me a lot of Dark City, which I love. So it's getting bonus points for that. I liked it more than Pontypool, but less than Enemy. So that means I'm at a 7.75 nonsense ramblings out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's right around there. But I would go 6.5. 6.5 nonsense ramblings out of 10 for me. But yeah, it's not a bad movie. I've seen it before, but I've only saw it once before. This is the second time I've seen it. It's a good movie. I mean, I watched it probably in 2019. I think I watched it right after it came out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, once every 5 year kind of movie, sure.
Cool.
All right, anything else you want to add here?
No.
All right. So that's it for the Mind Games. But join us next week for another edition of Movies That Salem Actually Wanted to Watch. This time, these are movies that are not traditionally labeled as horror. I know we already talked about that a little bit with Enemy, but these are ones that people usually argue with me. Although those are not horror. But I will be making arguments in their defense. And Graveyard's just going to be sighing in the corner and letting me ramble on, and that's okay. But I won't tell you what those movies are, but I will tell you that all of them have robots in them.
Robots?
Robots.
Sweet.
So you'll find out what they are next time. So remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to.
And this has been Graveyard saying, have you checked on the children?
And this is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.
Yeah.